I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thanks so much for tuning in. We're about a half hour away from Ask Amy Anything. It's our regular hump show feature, so we need your questions. Although judging by the way Facebook is blowing up, I'm thinking producer Chris might already have as many questions as he could possibly manage. But you still have time. So late comers, procrastinators like me, I'm a huge procrastinator, you can send us your questions still on Facebook or on our show Twitter, After Hours CBS. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We'll get back to your phone calls if you want to weigh in a little more about this Tiger Woods situation. I hesitate to call it that. I do not know if he will be held liable in this wrongful death lawsuit filed by his former employee's family. So it's the family of the bartender who worked at Tiger's restaurant that got behind the wheel and killed himself in a car accident when he lost control of his vehicle. Thankfully, did not kill anyone else. But at 24 years old, you think, man, I mean, crappy choices, yes. Drinking problems, sure. But why the hell was he behind the wheel? That's my question. The wrongful death suit is pointing more towards the fact that he was being served when he was a habitual drinker, but also one who clearly was already intoxicated. At this point, don't know if law enforcement will reopen the case. They hadn't filed charges, and this happened back in December, but the attorney for Nicholas's family is alleging that the bar actually destroyed video evidence that would help their case, that would prove their case, prove that this young man should have been cut off and never should have been allowed to continue drinking when he was already so far over the legal limit. And then, of course, he gets into a car. So the question of justice and whether or not other people should be held responsible and how they should be held responsible for this man's choices. That to me is, I think there's a lot of layers to pick apart and a lot of questions to be asked. Whether or not money changes hands, I hope that we hold ourselves accountable and responsible for what happens with the people around us, especially our coworkers. We don't walk through this life on our own. We don't live and operate in a vacuum. So I hope that I'm the kind of person that takes some accountability and tries to step in and help out or step in and offer some type of counsel or wisdom, even if the person hates me for it and tells me it's none of my damn business. I hope I'm still the kind of person that speaks up to try to prevent something like this. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, again, CBS Sports Radio, and we'll take more of your calls. Big story on Tuesday evening was the NBA Draft Lottery, Chapter 1. This was the first time we saw the new system put in place and then watched it blow the whole thing up. So instead of the Knicks, the Cavs, or the Suns, who had the best odds to earn the number one pick, it was the Pelicans in New Orleans, who just went through an entire year of drama themselves. Anthony Davis requesting a trade. I think the Pelicans were dangling him just to see what they might get in return from the Lakers, but had no intention of trading him with so much time left on his deal. They end up shutting him down. They probably win more games than they should have, even after that. But what an effect it had on their locker room, as well as the Lakers' locker room. So it threw two franchises into turmoil. One general manager got fired. another president of basketball operations stepped down. And so two franchises completely thrown into chaos and flux. And Pelicans head coach Alvin Gentry has been really open about how bad this was for his locker room. But this will help. It certainly does help when you end up with the number one overall pick and the right of first refusal for Zion Williamson. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
Hungry for a taste of the most delicious audio of the night? You came to the right place. It's time for Bite Me with Amy Lawrence. Here's Amy Lawrence.
It was Patrick Ewing who was there for the Knicks, representing them, hoping to bring them some good luck. It didn't work that way, though he had a huge smile on his face. Maybe feeling a little awkward when the Knicks were revealed as the number three team in the overall draft order, not the number one.
I was still hoping that we were going to get the number one pick, but, you know, three is very good. I think I'm proud, and whoever we draft, I'm proud. I know they're going to be happy and proud to be a New York Knicks.
So Patrick Ewing, whoever it is, shows up here. They better be happy and proud. They better be excited to represent this storied franchise that just seems to take hit after hit. Now, some of the Knicks' demise, some of their futilities, it's their own fault. The hires they've made, the choices they've made, the different free agent contracts, and now the decision to try to blow it up and start over. Except tanking doesn't guarantee you a damn thing in the NBA. Especially not with this new draft lottery system. Patrick Ewing was there in all of his glory and interviewed on MSG. The idea of the Lakers getting the number one pick was dangling out there for a while, because when they showed the number 11 pick and it wasn't Los Angeles, we knew then that the Lakers had made a sizable jump. So it was the Knicks waiting to see where they might land, but it was also the Lakers who could have ended up with that number one pick because they made it into the top four. They were represented by Kyle Kuzma, resplendent in a purple jacket.
I think the biggest thing is, you know, whatever hype you have outside of the NBA really doesn't matter, because once you get here, it's a whole different ball game. You're playing as a grown man. It's a little bit different than college, and, you know, they say there's no boys allowed for a reason. So coming in, just being ready and, you know, understanding that, you know, everybody is trying to get your job, you know, will take you a long ways.
So Kyle Kuzma flashed a big smile when his purple jacket was pointed out and he felt like he had been the guy that brought good luck to the Lakers. Also, it was LeBron who tweeted not that long after the draft lottery was over with a pair of eyeballs, number four. Beautiful. I don't know if he was trolling the Knicks or not, but the Lakers make a big move from number 11 into the top four. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Zion Williamson was there in the front row. I thought that was strange. It's not like the actual draft was taking place. This was the draft lottery, and yet he was there along with John Morant, along with his former Duke teammate, RJ Barrett. These two guys could very well end up going number one, number two, number one, number three. But Zion right now has to be thinking about a future in New Orleans.
A lot has changed, because a lot of people thought I wouldn't do anything in college because I came from a small high school. So I guess being a potential number one pick, that wasn't always the case for me, because people doubted me a lot. But I wasn't really focused on that. I was just focused on hooping and just having fun.
I'm fortunate to share the spotlight actually with one of my closest friends and, you know, and other great players in the draft. So, I mean, just going into the NBA, I know I'm not going to be, you know, the best player right away, but that's the fun part. You get to work towards something.
So we already heard from him. RJ Barrett sitting alongside his Duke teammate and recognizing that he's not going to be the number one pick, that all this attention is focused on Zion Williamson, and yet not begrudging him that. I know I'm not going to be the top player in this draft, but I'm so thrilled for my brother And then Zion, who has never been to New Orleans, by the way, so may very well soon make his first trip. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Alvin Gentry let out a whoop and a phrase that we cannot repeat here on the show, at least without getting dumped, when he found out the Pelicans won the draft lottery. Now, it wasn't the TV version. It wasn't what we were watching. He was in the back room, so he knew over an hour before anybody else did and couldn't share the news because he wasn't allowed to use his phone. They were sequestered in that back room. However, that giant smile had not faded from his face when he was interviewed on NBA TV.
You know, obviously, we can't talk about picks right now, but we're going to get a really good player. You know, probably a guy that's going to be a generational player. Yes. So we're excited about that.
Zion Williamson may or may not be the number one pick. I don't know if he is. In fact, I saw the reports out there on Tuesday that if the Knicks had grabbed that number one slot, they actually were considering potentially making a move to get Anthony Davis and trading that number one pick. So there are possibilities here. You would think the Pelicans would keep it. It sounds like they're pretty happy with what they got there and winning the lottery, even though their odds were standing at 6% when the night started. So what kind of an impact player is Zion? Well, we saw him in a limited basis his freshman year at Duke. Remember, he missed some time with injury. Duke did not reach the Final Four, but he did average 22 points, nearly 9 rebounds per game as a true freshman. And Gary Parrish has been charting his progress and his impact all season long.
I can't promise you he's the best prospect we've ever seen, but what I can tell you is we've never seen anybody like him. You know, at 6'7", 285 pounds, this is not hyperbole. Nobody else that height and weight can do the things he can do on the entire planet. And so he's a fascinating, fascinating prospect and player. And I think barring injury, he's going to be terrific and a franchise guy for a long, long time. He is worthy. He's worthy of the hype. He earned it. You know, showing game after game after game what he could do in a team setting with surrounded by great players. He was clearly the star, and I think that'll translate to the NBA.
So Gary Parrish on CBS Sports HQ. This is a star in the making. A Star is Born. Wasn't that a big movie just in the last year? I don't think that Bradley Cooper can play Zion Williamson. Zion's got skills. And the footwork and the ability to affect a game in so many different ways. He's a versatile player, still working on that jump shot for sure, but we saw him shoot at times during the NCAA tournament and the presence that he has. I'm really impressed with the commanding presence, even though he only spent, well, not even a full year on the court playing for Duke because of his injuries, but blew out a shoe. We even got that bit of drama from his freshman year. So we'll hear a lot about Zion between now and June when the draft takes place. And the Pelicans are sitting in the catbird seat. A lot of that, all of the comments coming from NBA TV outside of Patrick Ewing. All right, straight ahead. We still need your questions for Ask Amy Anything. We've got that not even 25 minutes away. So send those to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. And I know more of you want to weigh in on the phone, so we'll line up some calls, 855-212-4227. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
It's been a great season. Me and my teammates had a wonderful season. Very successful. We won the regular season championship, conference championship. Got to the tournament and won a game there. And I mean, it's just something to just look back on. And obviously, I have the opportunity to make it to the NBA and soon get drafted. So, yeah, it feels good.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, and Ja Morant, Murray State. Really neat story in March, during March Madness. They created some of that madness themselves, and he obviously boosted his draft stock with his performances. And so you've got this intrigue, right, of these impact players and where they might land. And maybe it's Morant who ends up with the Grizzlies who will select number two, or maybe there are trades. But Zion cast this massive shadow. I just think it was awkward to have him there reacting to the possibility that he could end up in a variety of places, but then to see the Pelicans grab that number one pick. I don't know. I don't know that I feel like that's a great situation to put him in. He handled it well, but for heaven's sakes, this wasn't the draft. It was the lottery. And now they have to go through that whole process again when they get to the actual draft. I don't know. I just wasn't sure I liked the dynamic. Oh, and for heaven's sakes, the coverage was so unbelievably melodramatic. There was live play-by-play taking place. And the pre-game show lasted as long as the pre-show for the Kentucky Derby. It just, so overblown. 855-212-4227. Last chance to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. So we're 10 minutes away-ish. You've got spots on Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. And before we get to the questions, we'll have Chris reveal the answers to the trivia question that he threw out for Dave's birthday. 855-212-4227. Mark is listening in Iowa. Mark, welcome.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good. I just wanted to weigh in on the subject of the Tiger Woods restaurant incident and tell you from experience as a parent of an alcoholic, recent alcoholic, they are the sneakiest people in the world. And his best friends through college and his girlfriend at the time had no clue that my son was an alcoholic, much less his parents, myself and my wife. We argued with emergency room doctors, no, alcohol withdrawal is not a possibility for his symptoms, on and on and on. He was full-fledged alcoholic and working hard to hide it from everyone. He hid it from his girlfriend, his boss, his best friends. They told the emergency room doctor, he's the guy that always takes our keys away from us when we've had too much to drink. My son could probably talk to you with an alcohol level of 2.0 to 3.0, and you'd have not a clue that he had even a beer. He would drink a beer in the bar with his friends, then go outside for a smoke, go to his car, augment his supply to feed his need, and come back in. Nobody knew. So, if this guy was in the same situation, no one might have had a clue of his condition and his alcohol level.
That may be the truth. However, he, according to the attorney, not only did he drink regularly at this bar, so he wasn't hiding how much he was drinking, but he was a bartender there. And he drank while he was working and then after work with other employees. So I don't know what he looked like and how he acted when his blood alcohol level was three times the legal limit, only that there was definitely a history there that people knew.
Sure, I agree. And I agree, but he could have been supplying himself with a lot more than he showed to other people if he was trying to hide it like my son was. So, mm-hmm. It's really hard to judge what went on there without knowing the facts, because I'll tell you what, we've had so many people, friends and family, judge us. How could you not know? How could you not know? Well, if they're working hard to hide it, they can certainly do it. And when they're used to drinking and when they're consuming that much alcohol on a regular basis, they don't appear to be drunk anymore. They can be so far over the limit that you'd never know it. There's just no way to judge that. So,
Well, there has to be some way, because that's the responsibility. There are laws that that stipulate you're in some states, not in every state, that bartenders and servers are responsible for cutting people off if they've been overserved. So maybe just by sheer volume. Again, I don't know. I wasn't there. I just know the attorney is pointing to the fact that there was a history there, and because he was an employee, they all knew him and knew his history. Mark, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks for taking my call.
Kel is listening in Boston. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Amy. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I guess I'm kind of building on what a couple other people said. One of the biggest arguments I've heard for this case is, you know, his blood alcohol level was 3 times over the limit. Therefore, the bartender should have seen that he was, you know, intoxicated, and he should have cut him off or called the cops on him. But the problem that arises in that situation is that, you know, everyone's different, and mm-hmm. like normal people like you and me, you know, if we drank 3 times the legal limit, we'd probably black out. But, you know, someone like him who's drinking tons of alcohol every single day, that might be just his normal functioning state. And so he might appear to be normal while his decisions are being, you know, severely impaired. Mm. So it would be tough for a bartender to just, like, see someone acting completely normal at his bar and cut him off when he doesn't really see anything physically different.
But even
what would be different is when he gets in his...
Well, what would be different is how much alcohol he's consumed. I mean, again, I think there was a pattern in history there, but also... regardless of what he's saying or how he's acting, I understand what you're saying. And I have some dating history with a couple of men who were big time drinkers, one of whom was an alcoholic. And I understand what you mean. Sometimes you can't tell just by their actions, but you would know by sheer volume of alcohol that was consumed that's, put it simply, that's a lot of alcohol.
So, yeah, but then the problem is that makes kind of a gray area, because then how do you draw the line? How do you determine, you know what, this is the amount of alcohol I'm allowed to serve and that I can't serve anyone anymore?
Well, just by sheer science, you would know that a lot of that 3 hours worth of drinking would definitely affect your blood alcohol level. Even if some people handle it differently, just the volume of alcohol you would know is absolutely affecting a person's blood alcohol level.
Sure. I guess what I'm saying is that could set a precedent for cases that are a little less clearly cut.
Right, I gotcha.
Than this case.
I understand what you're saying, and you're right. It's the question that comes up. Who am I to judge how someone else can handle their alcohol? It's his choice or her choice to continue drinking and to drink this way. I still, even if there's no legal obligation, I hope that we as friends or coworkers, and again, they had a relationship with this guy. It's not like he was a stranger who was just drinking at the bar. He was a fellow employee who was there on a regular basis and was regularly drinking with them. And so I would hope that as a coworker, as a friend, we would err on the side of caution and say, yeah, he's got a history and maybe he handles it well, but at the same time, he could be out on the roads and could hurt himself or someone else. So that's the part that gets me, is that it wasn't a stranger. It wasn't just some random person who showed up on a weeknight and decided to drink a lot of alcohol and looked and sounded normal. They knew this guy. They worked with this guy.
Right. Well, thanks for taking the call.
No, I appreciate your perspective. Oh, thank you,
Kel. Have a good rest of your night.
Thanks, Kel. Thanks for listening in Boston. Yeah, I mean, Kel makes a great point, and others do as well, which is why I keep saying I don't know what the legal obligation is. The laws vary from state to state, and the fact that there were no criminal charges filed, at least to this point. Now, the attorney is claiming that there was evidence destroyed, which could turn this entire case on its head. And if they can prove that, well, then you're talking about an obstruction of justice and an entirely different case. But there were no criminal charges filed to this point. So maybe there is no legal obligation. But a civil lawsuit, or in this case, filed by the young man's family, is a different standard. And they knew him. And that's what the attorney has claimed. That's what the family has claimed, is that it wasn't a stranger to them. Nicholas was someone they worked with and they worked around and they spent time with on a regular basis. So they knew him. They knew his pattern. They knew when it was dangerous to continue serving him alcohol. And you know what? That may be more of a moral obligation, a moral accountability, just because you care about someone, as opposed to it being your actual legal responsibility. There's a lot of gray area there. I just know if it was me, and if it was a friend of mine, I've been in that situation before, I'd rather say, no, you don't need to drive. You may be fine, but let's not take the chance. And they had a personal relationship with him, so you would think they might have been able to say that to him.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Thank you so much for tuning in. Our first Ask Amy Anything in a couple of weeks since I was on vacation last week. And I believe that many of you post your questions on Facebook, though I try to stay away from rifling through them. I just noticed that the comments were piling up. And you also weigh in on Twitter, so that's awesome. Some of you trying to answer the trivia question that Chris posed for Dave's birthday. And before we get into your questions for me, how about Chris, you give us the answer for those three baseball players who have 250 career home runs, all with the same team, all active.
So that would be Ryan Braun, Milwaukee Brewers, 330 career home runs. Ryan Zimmerman of the Nationals with 267 career home runs. And Joey Votto of the Cincinnati Reds, Votto. 272 home runs.
That makes sense. All right, good stuff. Some of you had the answers, some of you did not. Thanks, as always, for weighing in. It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. And now Chris is prepared, I'm sure, to ask me questions.
As always, and we'll kick it off with David and Kim, who both have questions related to sleep, specifically sleep coming back off of a vacation for you. David says, how long does it take for you to readjust to quote-unquote normal people hours?
I'm going to stop you right there.
Okay.
That's not fair. There are millions of people who work overnights. Millions of people. So whatever normal is, just because you work at night and sleep during the daytime doesn't make you abnormal. So for those of you who are working second and third shift, we do not think you're abnormal. How long does it take me to adjust to sleeping at night would be the question that I would answer. It takes a couple days. So I do it every weekend. Every weekend I go back and forth and flip my schedule. And so it never really gets comfortable because I don't sleep well on Friday nights. Saturday mornings, I wake up at 5 a.m. no matter what, no matter if I've taken melatonin, I still wake up and can't get back to sleep. And so I generally just get up and deal with it. Saturday nights I sleep better. But then on Sunday, it's a really long day because I'm up early for church and I'm up pretty much all day. And so, yeah, it's constant flipping. On vacation, it takes 2 or 3 days to get adjusted to sleeping at night. So, yeah, it's not an easy situation because your body clock does tend to revolt if you don't give it some routine, which is not what I give it ever.
Ditto and third-o for Dave as well.
Third-o.
We're inventing words here.
Freudy.
Ask Amy Anything.
Freudo.
David wants to know, who is your favorite sports author?
Favorite sports author? Meaning fiction?
I think anything's on the table, right? So if an athlete wrote a biography you were a fan of?
I like what Nick Foles writes. His book is good. And also, you know, I follow him on Twitter. He's got some good stuff. He's written articles and stuff. But he's obviously not. I mean, he's an author, kind of. Who's my favorite sports author? I don't know. That's a good. Who wrote The Natural? That was a really good book. I really liked that one. And we periodically have authors here on the show. But I feel guilty singling out one. But yeah, I remember reading The Natural way before I saw the movie, and I was really impressed with that book. So yeah, I don't know that I read a lot of sports though. That's the thing. I read autobiographies, so that's why I pointed out Nick Foles. I thought did a great job writing. I really like the book that Bruce Arena wrote after the U.S. men's national team failed to make the World Cup a couple years ago. But honestly, I don't read a lot of sports books. I prefer not to. But I did read The Natural, so I just don't remember who the author
Bernard
is.
Bernard Malamud? Does that ring a bell?
I guess.
That's what the Google says. So
We'll
go with that for now.
Okay.
Big Jim wants to know, when on the beach, do you prefer the sunrises or the sunsets?
Sunsets. Penny and I went out there every evening and ran around while the sun was setting. And if you have not seen the pictures of the sunsets on Hilton Head that I took, well, check them out. They're on Facebook. And the colors are glorious as they reflect in the surf and on the water, the purples and the pinks and the oranges. They're also on my Twitter page, A-Law Radio. So, yes, not just because I am not a morning person or anything that resembles a morning person, but also because I love the way the colors play on the water and the cool of the evening. Plus, you know, in the evening, the water is extremely warm. It's had the sun on it all day long, and I love walking. Penny doesn't like running in the water, but she likes to run in the sand and roll in the sand. So I would walk in the water, and she would run in the sand, and it was our evening routine.
Chuck wants to know, can you please share your recipe for pumpkin s'mores?
Oh, yeah, I can, but right now? Is anybody going to be taking notes? Or maybe I could share it on social media? Okay, let's do that. For those of you who would like the recipe for pumpkin s'mores, I have actually shared it before. So maybe if you Google my, or you search on Twitter with my handle and pumpkin s'mores recipe, it's on Twitter somewhere. And I believe it's on Facebook as well. But I'll do it again. Just, I mean, no one's going to be sitting there taking notes while I'm telling you. But you only need a few ingredients, though. All it is graham crackers, obviously. Graham crackers, chocolate chips, marshmallow, and the pumpkin, and then some butter. That's pretty much your entire thing. And it only bakes for, 4 or 5 minutes. The rest is all just the prep, so it's awesome.
Jim wants to know, this is regular size Jim. We had a question from Big Jim before, so this is medium-sized Jim asking, what do you usually like to eat for breakfast?
I eat eggs almost every day on vacation because I love eggs. Generally, though, when I'm on a work schedule, I eat oatmeal or cereal before I go to bed, which is my breakfast. If I could have pancakes at every meal, oh my gosh, I love pancakes. I love syrup. But I don't do that for obvious reasons. Syrup has a ton of sugar and it's not super healthy. Actually, there are some health benefits to syrup, but not the amount that I consume when I'm eating pancakes. So pancakes, French toast would be my choice if I could eat as much as I wanted and never put on any weight. But that's not reality.
Unfortunately not. Ben wants to know, have you ever played the role of a crasher at a public event, aka pretended to be invited when you weren't, such as a wedding, graduation, New Year's Eve party, or banquet?
Yep.
Can we get some details?
Well, you ask a yes-no question, you generally are should be expecting a yes-no answer. But I will elaborate. I was once on a basketball trip with the University of Hartford. So we were, I think we might have been in Chicago. No, we were out of the country. Where were we? Maybe we were in Mexico. We did a tournament in Cancun. And I do remember we were in this grand hotel and there was a wedding going on. And the athletic trainer and I, who roomed together, and we were always looking for shenanigans because we would get bored on trips. So we were walking through the lobby of this grand hotel and there was a chocolate fondue fountain. So we had just come off a fancy dinner. Yes, in fact, it was in Mexico because we got all dressed up for a Thanksgiving dinner. So we had just done this fancy dinner and we wander through this lobby and we spot the chocolate fondue. So we just pretended that we were the guests at this wedding and helped ourselves to chocolate fondue. It was so delicious. It was a fountain. The chocolate was pouring down in a fountain. It was heaven. And nobody noticed us because it was a wide open affair and lots of wedding guests mingling around. And so we fit right in. And it was so worth the chocolate. Oh, my gosh.
If you guys had to come up with a persona, did you guys think of any?
No.
The third cousin, sisters, uncles, nieces, nephews.
No,
friend.
We would have been friends of the groom. Actually, it was a wedding of two Hispanics. I don't know if they were Mexicans or not, but we wouldn't have looked like we belonged there. However, I can speak Espanol, so I would have been able to rattle off a few words in Spanish, and clearly that would have worked. Would have provided our cover.
Brian wants
such good chocolate fondue.
Oh boy.
It was a chocolate fountain. It was amazing.
Wait, hold on. We need to reminisce for just another second.
So
let it simmer. Let it
now
simmer.
I need some chocolate.
Brian says, oh my God. Did you hear that Disney is making more Star Wars movies after Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah, of course. I mean, how could you miss that last week or the week before? It was the biggest story anywhere. But that's not for me. While I may end up watching them because I like to read the old legend Star Wars books. The thing is, I'm attached to the Skywalker legacy. I'm attached to Princess Leia and Chewbacca and Han Solo and Luke Skywalker. And so it won't be the same. Yes, there'll be more movies, but these are the iconic characters that I grew up with. They're the ones that I have been watching my entire life, and so I don't know that it'll be the same for me. But sure, it's great. Now, I'll also be honest. I'm privy, not privy, sorry. I am partial to George Lucas. And even though I do love the new films that came out, and I'm psyched that we get to see these characters again, I'm still more partial to Lucas. So I don't know how I feel about Disney just kind of jamming more of these movies down our throats. However, it is a big moneymaker, so I guess that's the name of the game.
We have a follow-up Star Wars question, and that is, which was the first Star Wars movie you saw in theaters?
I don't remember.
Wow.
I mean, I was... That's a long time ago. It would have been one of the originals. But it would I would have been too young to... Actually, I don't know if it would have been one of the originals. That's a good question. I'm going to have to ask my fam. I'll ask my mom if we ever went and saw one in theaters. Because I don't know. I wouldn't have... The first two, would have, it wouldn't have made any difference to me. So I don't know if I saw any of them in theaters. I may have all seen them after the fact.
Which was the first one you saw in general?
Oh, well, of course, Star Wars. My mom, so that's the thing. My mom introduced them to me, me and my brother, when we were younger. And we got to watch them probably on a VCR tape, I would assume, unless they were on TV. And so I remember her making a big deal out of it. This is Star Wars and kind of explaining it to us and us getting to watch them. But I don't think we saw them in theaters. I don't think that's the case.
I don't know if this question's ever been asked.
So then my first Star Wars movie in a theater would have been...
Episode one?
I don't think I saw those in a theater either. That's a good question. Gosh, I don't think so. I don't recall that I've seen any of them in a theater until The Force Awakens. I saw The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi twice each in theater. And I also saw Rogue One in theater. I didn't see Solo in theater, though. So I'm going to have to think about that. That's a good question.
So now, a question for me here. Mm-hmm. Where does
Wait, for you?
No, from me, for you. Oh. Where does your mom's Star Wars fandom rank compared to yours?
Oh, she loves it like we do. We have gone the last three Christmases, sorry, to see the new movies, but she gets very confused. Oh my gosh, she asks so many questions. And so after we get out, she has to ask, like, I don't get it. Wait, what happened? And so it's not as much fun going with my mom anymore because a lot of it goes over her head. But you know what? A lot of it goes over my head too, but you don't realize until you watch it a second and third time and then you kind of get more of the details. I'm going to have to ask mom. Honestly, I don't think I saw any of them in theaters. Interesting. Good questions. I'm sure there are many more. We'll continue with Ask Amy Anything until you run out of questions every week on The Hump Show. Thanks for finding us on Twitter and Facebook. We've got 1 hour to go. Good Wednesday morning to you.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.